Hello, everybody. It's Harry from Upload VR. Welcome to the VR Gamescast, which is back. We're back after a brief sojour here. I guess you could say it was a little German sojour. I'm joined by my colleague and one of VR journalism's most eminent minds, Ian Hamilton. Oh, Ian, how are you? How's your week been?
Oh, I'm good. I just came back from soccer practice with my kids, and I'm exhausted.
Life soccer practice, I take it.
A bunch of kids running around a soccer field trying to make them kick the ball in the right direction. It's quite a thing.
Should get them all in headsets, see how they do in VR.
No.
Just be running into each other. So for those listening via audio, Ian and I are recording this in our virtual studio in VR. We're sitting across from each other in a virtual studio room. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see our avatars, of course. But in real life, we're oceans apart. I'm in Australia. Ian is in the US. And before we get into things, I just want to give out a big shout out and thank you to all our members on YouTube who are the Lucky Dogs Band, Robert Quinones, Aaron Prindle, Richard Meller, Nick Andrus, Stephen Reynolds, Captain Clutch, James Outloud, Anthony Manwexford, Handy Panama, Andrew Tech, Skiva 007, Sexy Sexy Bicycle, Rick Tett, 360 Pickleball, Smashed Reality, Adam Hartzell, and John Westra. Man, I know how Jamie used to feel saying that list out loud now. That's, you got to get into a rhythm with that one. But thank you very much, guys. We appreciate it. And now that's out of the way, let's get into things. Ian, should we talk about the biggest VR game story since we did an episode last, which was about a month ago now?
Oh, yeah.
Let's start off. Half-Life 2, the VR community mod. I'll get the video up on the screen. This is actually coming out now. We have a release date, and it's coming to Steam, which originally when we ran the story, they weren't sure if it was going to come to Steam in time for the release. The release is September 16. But since then, they have said it is coming to Steam, so it'll launch with like kind of a mod banner. But yeah, if you own Half-Life, this will be like a mod you can download, or Half-Life 2, this is a mod you can download on Steam. It's been many, many years in the works. I remember Jamie and I talked about this loads because it's been one that he's been following for, I think it was close to like 6 years or something. Are you going to check this out? You're a Half-Life fan, aren't you? You're a big... Oh, you're on mute, Ian.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check this out. Yeah, I was testing Heaney's new mute button here. I wanted to make sure when you pick up the headset, it always scuffs the microphone, and I was looking out from under the headset for a second. But yeah, no, I'm really excited for this, and I'm curious how it's going to hold up. Right, that I was reading Jamie's last story on the history of this app, and they had to throw out everything at one point, didn't they? I think, and had to start from scratch.
Much.
It's like a crazy history story behind this mod, and
from what I understand, basically whenever. Several people have worked on it. At one point recently, even Dr. Beef worked on it, who, of course, has done loads of other Quest ports for classic games. But he was on it for a little bit recently. But yeah, as I understand it, different people have come onto the project, worked on it for a bit, then kind of left things or done bits of it. And I think that basically meant that it's been so long between people that it basically huge parts of it had to be redone. You know, that they scrapped it and redid bits. But yeah, but it's it'll be interesting to see what it's like. It's got a whole VR weapons overhaul. I know they said as well, post-launch, they're going to further polish the VR weapons and add more movement and comfort options. I'm not sure what's in there at the moment, whether you've got any at all, but they're going to add that more of those afterwards. It'll be interesting. They basically said it's still a beta that it's launching in, but they've said that it's good enough that they think they've had people testing it and you can play it start to finish. It's good enough to play in full publicly now. It doesn't have support for the episodes either, which they say are going to come later on. So it's just standard Half-Life 2. But it'll be interesting. I'm surprised we haven't seen more people remake Half-Life 2 stuff in Alex, specifically. I guess it makes sense we've got this first given it's been so long. But I also was expecting, there was a few things, but I was expecting to see more like, here's this level from Half-Life 2 recreated in Alex kind of stuff, which I haven't seen a lot of. It'd be interesting to see if that ever happens and we get a comparison.
Yeah, over on the hardware show on VR Download on Tuesdays, we were talking about the evolution of Steam. And, these types of mods, community mods, could be one of the things that really sets Steam apart over the long term, right? There's been so much built by the community for side quest and getting stuff from like PC games, classic PC games, up and running standalone on Quest, I would love to see that built into Steam, right? You can go and get the Half-Life game, Half-Life 2 game, and then add on the mods and then play them in future VR headsets. But obviously we know there's still such a long path, but you know, that's kind of the dream, right? Is you could have a standalone Steam headset down the line and be able to play all these games you remember from the 90s and 2000s in VR would be such an incredible thing. But
yeah,
obviously it's even a long just way the away.
I mean, even just the workshops, the Steam Workshop structure is so good for if there was ever, you know, standalone VR stuff on Steam, and then devs can easily kind of use the workshop structure to, you know, for any kind of game as a mod, a system to browse and download mods, which is really cool. So yeah, that's out September 16. Looks interesting. Definitely keen to check it out. The next piece of news is an interesting one because it was originally a piece of news earlier in the year and then kind of disappeared, which is that Transformers Beyond Reality, which is now a PSVR exclusive game, is out officially. Is it today? What date are we today? It's September 1st. What is it in America? September 1st?
Yeah, it was funny. No. You were messing with me. I was looking at your the way you had the dates formatted in our
yes.
notes, and you've got it.
Yeah.
You've got the Australian reverse format where I couldn't remember whether
yes,
it was
apologies
like,
about that.
Yeah, the 9th of September
of course,
or the 1st of September. Yeah.
No, yes. Yes, yeah. So it is the 1st. So that's out now. I'm just trying to find a we've got a video of it here somewhere. This is the one. It's an on-rails like arcade-looking shooter, but what's interesting about this is that back in February, they said it's coming out in March for PSVR and PCVR, and then the quote was, I quote, it was derailed for reasons beyond the studio's control. And then just disappeared until now. So, and now it's not coming out on PCVR, at least not at the moment. They've said that they're just releasing on PSVR and they'll see what happens with regards to other platforms, including PCVR and Quest. So, an interesting one. Are you a Transformers person, Ian?
Oh, yeah. So, I just got my son the Lego Optimus Prime. And
oh,
we spent about a month putting together that Lego Optimus Prime. And, oh, wow, that's really cool to be able to, like, it's got 10 bags of Legos inside of it. It cost an arm and a leg to buy it. But being able to transform a Lego into the truck as well as the Transformers, amazing. Yeah,
it's very cool.
We tried, you know, this when I looked at this game, it has the vibes of something that you would see in like a Dave and Buster's, right?
Yeah.
And there's we recently got together and we tried a whole bunch of Dave and Buster's not a whole bunch of Dave and Buster's things, but we tried Top Gun Maverick.
Top Gun.
On
How was
their
that?
Simulator, and it was pretty cool.
Did you puke?
No, it was well done. Like
okay.
They had a motion simulator, and then they've got these magnetic connectors where you can just pull the headset right off your head and then connect it magnetically straight to your head. And they've got like a small list of games that are playable in Dave and Buster's. And yeah, this has the same vibe
it
as
does.
Being something that could work well there.
Andrew Tech in the chat said the Transformers game reminds me of Pistol Whip, which is funny as well because Pistol Whip also gives the same kind of vibe to me of like this could be in an arcade and you could be playing this with a headset. But yeah, this doesn't. I don't know what to think of this. I'm not sure why it disappeared for so long. It's kind of an interesting one. Maybe I'll check it out if I ever plug my PSVR back in before I get a PSVR 2. That's
it's
kind
weird
of always
timing,
the,
right? Right. This
it's
is
very weird
out.
Timing.
Right as the hype is sort of building for PSVR 2. So
yeah,
I do wonder what kind of success it's going to have sales-wise.
Yes, and that actually brings us to our next story, which is PSVR 2 related, which is Resident Evil 8 will be playable on the show floor at the Tokyo Game Show, which is super interesting because that's on the 15th, so it's not that far away. That'll be a chance for anyone who's in public at the show to be able to play both PSVR 2 for the first time and try out Resident Evil 8. So that'll be interesting to see what people think of that and, what
did
it's like.
Did you ever play the first one through, or are you too scared?
The first, oh no, I've not played Resident Evil 7. You mean 7, I presume, yeah. Like on PSVR? No.
The first VR one is what I
first
meant.
First VR one, yeah. No, I've actually not, but I've played through part of 8 on like PS5. I've played through not all of it, mostly the castle sequence, which is, I believe, a portion of which will be what's on the show floor. So no, I haven't. I am really, really excited to... Like, I loved Resident Evil 8 was one of those games that came out and I played a bit of it and I was like, I'll come back to this and finish it another time. And I'm very excited to try it on PSVR 2. To me, that's probably the one that I'm like, yeah, that's... Because I love the... I think the environments were so beautiful, even just on a flat screen, to kind of explore. It had some really stunning looking stuff and I can't wait to see what it'd be like on PSVR 2. But I imagine I'll be able to play 7 on PSVR 2 as well. I would hope, maybe not. I guess that, yeah, it's kind of...
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
That's the weird area that we don't know.
That's the area that Sony has not detailed is what is the forward compatibility situation there, right? You've got the Move controllers that are completely different, and then you had a lot of DualShock support in a lot of games, and just those new controllers follow the layout pattern by all the other controllers. And
it seems like the implication that there's not actually any compatibility. I keep thinking that, oh, I'll be able to play that. It's a bit like another one that I haven't played on PSVR is Iron Man. And although that got the PS5 patch that made it a bit faster and whatever to load, I've always been like, oh, I'll play that on PSVR too. But we're at a point now where it's like, oh, I don't think that's actually going to be possible unless... they bring out a specific like port of it. It seems like that's at least from what we know.
I don't think Resident Evil 8 can I don't think it can be overstated. You can't be overstated how big of a deal it is for PSVR, right? Like the first one really gave so many people a reason to go out and get a PSVR and experience that horrifying.
And it's what I hear people talk about. Like people who even had a PSVR at like went out and got one, as you said, and then put it down and perhaps never played anything again. I've heard people have always been like, oh, but the Resident Evil 7 was so good. I played that, you know, back when it came out and that was amazing. It's frequently mentioned. So it'd be interesting. Also interesting because there are those supposedly very good mods on PC for PC VR. There's one for Resident Evil 8 as well. So it'd be interesting to see that comparison and how that, weighs up when put next to each other. The next story, which is a continuation of what we've been talking about here, is one small little fact, but a big one at the same time. PSVR 2 will release in early 2023, which is technically a hardware thing, but this is kind of, it's related to lots of games and what we're saying. But that was pretty much all the info we got. Nothing else. You broke the story, Ian. What explain it a bit more, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's it. We talked about it on the hardware show, and it's literally all we know. It's very significant when you start putting it in the larger context of knowing that we thought this year was going to be the next generation of all these platforms hitting, but every indication we've got is the only thing that's sort of lining up is it's looking like Pico is going to try to enter at least some Western effort before this year is out. And then we know PSVR has been moved into next year, and we've had every indication that Apple is next year as well.
Which all of this stuff we thought might be this year at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, so it's a big...
It really seemed like it, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a big... It's a bummer, right? Like, we wanted there to be a platform war sooner rather than later because of just the excitement that we know comes with that. I know it gets annoying hearing fans sort of only going in your camp and arguing for your side, but at the same time, I'd rather have that than kind of just people waiting and biding their time, so...
Yeah. It's certainly... It's interesting too, I think, because clearly when you start to put the dots together, this was meant to be this year, it's been delayed, all that kind of stuff. I think it's clear that this was meant to be a holiday thing that would, a bit like PSVR or PS5 came out, you know, November-ish, right in time for that holiday stuff. And I guess there was maybe also, there's been concerns with every tech stuff about supply chain and, amounts, so maybe that wouldn't have worked.
And it could still come back. It could still get worse, right? Like
exactly, yeah. It's hard. It's hard to tell. So it's hard to, I guess, rely on that. But it seems like definitely the plan was this to come out. I can totally see them having launched this, November with not Breath of the Wild, Horizon Forbidden What's it called? Is there a Wild in there? I'm getting confused. I thought Breath of the Wild. Horizon Forbidden West? Which one's that one? Call of the Mountain is the PSVR one. Oh, man, there's too many. My mind went Breath of the Wild, and I was like, that's not Horizon.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I like Call of the Mountain. Andrew's comments asking about Tron and loving to see ILM Disney make a Tron VR game. I think that's a really, really, really great shout out.
Yeah.
A title like it really is going to take someone making a deal with Disney to, you know, get a developer on board for doing that. But it is such a good, we've seen so many disc games come and go. And then there's all the other things that you can do inside of Tron, those other classic games that they could adapt. I would love to see it. It's just, it's going to take someone really spending money to get that game made at this point.
And I like the follow-up comment too, saying, do you think Marty Coconut could get the Tron IP license? I would say probably not.
Well, so I put that question to Mighty Coconut when they announced the Jules Verne. Is it Jules Verne games?
Yeah.
Where they've got three courses coming out from the classic Jules Verne science fiction stories. So they're doing, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? They're doing Around the World in 80 Days. And what was the third one? Those are incredible ideas, and they're based on things that are in the public domain now, because, you know, Jules Verne is way dead. So
way dead.
Yeah, it's like they could. It was brilliant for them, I think, to pull out that content from such a long time ago and think of adapting it. And I don't know. It doesn't seem like they're in a place to make those kinds of deals to pull a Disney. I sort of commented last time that The Void took investment from Disney right around the time they started rolling out lots of really big properties at The Void that were based on Disney. And it's like, you know, there needs to be something in it for Disney them to really do it. And, you know, a couple million dollars in revenue isn't going to change Disney's bottom line, but maybe investing in something that could be a big new part of their business does make sense for Disney. So I don't know. I'm not saying Mighty Coconut needs to go out and take Disney money, but we do want those cool properties to play golf in.
Yeah. Well, I guess moving on to another release that came out, this is something that came out in between episodes, but I felt like it needed to be mentioned because it's quite significant, and that's Red Matter 2 released a couple of weeks ago now. I think it was about 2 weeks ago. Amazing, amazing graphics, which is mainly why I wanted to mention this. I'm trying to get the video up on our screen. There we go. It's coming up. So this is on both Quest 2 and PC VR. I reviewed it for us. It's a very, very good puzzle game, but really what makes this amazing is the graphics, particularly on Quest 2. I have no idea how they did it. Some of the stuff just blew me away. And it's one of those situations where I would say it's a very good puzzle game. If the graphics were like not as good as they are here, you'd kind of maybe be like, okay, I don't know how, you know, if you enjoy puzzle games, you might enjoy it, but otherwise, you know. But in this case, because of the combination of very good puzzle game, really stunning graphics, it's kind of to me like a must play on Quest. It's just a little bit off that I didn't give it our essential rating. I gave it recommended because I still think there's a few things that kind of hold it back. But visually, just absolutely amazing. You'll see the comparison after this little intro bit come up. Basically, it's very, very hard to tell which is which. There's some amazing reflections, amazing effects. You know, when you're using your scanner and it's got a little pointing kind of laser cursor that gets like accurately reflected against everything. There are these huge space vistas. It's really quite incredible. You know, you can kind of, it's even harder to see on the comparison. Playing in headset, you can see that PC VR has obviously like more detail and everything. I think it's the textures, the slightly higher resolution and whatnot. But I think that stuff kind of matters less because it's more about these really cool reflection effects and the lighting effects and the things that they've, all that stuff they've taken over to Quest, which really sells immersion more, I think, than having, you know, a floor texture look slightly higher resolution. So it's just amazing. I think if you haven't tried it out, even if you're not like going to play through the whole thing, this section, which is amazing to play through, is the first kind of 15 minutes. And just standing in this space environment is really amazing. I'm a sucker for sci-fi and space stuff, and this was so cool. You played a bit of this too, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I went in there and looked around, and you can see it down here, the difference down on the walkways. But it was incredibly gorgeous, and it was so wonderful to see this on Quest 2, because there's just been so much talk about graphics being such a limiting factor for standalone. And here's this game that kind of proves that great graphics are really possible. Like, you can do some really fantastic things that make you feel like you're there to such an incredible degree. And yeah, it is a testament to just what power great reflections have, great lighting has in just giving you that little extra bit of feeling there. I'm seeing Thomas saying, very much needed a walkthrough for some parts, but great game otherwise.
Yeah, and that's, I can see how you would feel that way. Yeah.
And I loved reading your review of it, where you talked about, and Jamie's original review of the first game, where the second half of the game, the puzzles got kind of too frustrating, just, you know, crossed over that line of puzzling fun to puzzling meanness. But you know, it's still not too much, right? Like, it's still
bearable, I think, enough. And I think that the difference is too, if I were playing this as a kind of, if I didn't have to finish this for review and I was just playing it as someone who wanted to check it out, if you hit a section where you're like, this is getting too frustrating puzzle wise, I don't think I want to play this anymore, you could just stop. Like, you know, I don't think it's like, the story is like fun, but it's not, you know, it's just a kind of basic sci-fi story. It's pretty good, but if you pick this up and played half it and put it down, I don't think you'd be like, it's more just, I think, the combination of the technical achievement with the, you know, the kind of game it is, it's just kind of something amazing to play through. But yeah, that second half, I think it kind of, I think because they're environment-based puzzles too, so you often just feel really dumb for not seeing something. It's hard to kind of, you're looking around being like, what, am I just missing something? What's the deal here? So I think it leads to a different kind of, a particular kind of frustration. But yeah, so that was Red Matter 2. Our last little piece of news, which is also kind of moving on to Gamescom stuff, which is Ultimex releases on September 15. Let me get a video of Ultimex up. And that is, it's the, basically, this is like the Rocket League-esque kind of multiplayer game from Resolution Games. I did try a little bit of this, only about 5 minutes at Gamescom. It's super interesting. I think they'll definitely, I hope to think there'll be an audience for this. And what's interesting too about it is it's free to play, which I think is definitely 100% the right move. And it's on like pretty much every platform you could want. It's on Pico, Quest, and PCVR, and I'm pretty certain, I have to double check, but I'm pretty certain it's cross-play between all those and everything you would expect as well. It seems like they've kind of thought all that stuff out, which is great, because that's the right approach to take for these kind of games, because they live and die on, you know, player base and getting people in, so that's why I think it's good it's free to play. But it was fun to try out. I played with some Resolution staff, really cool. I can totally see how there's a high skill ceiling there if that's something you're looking for, you know, kind of a competitive experience. One of the guys at Resolution was talking about someone else, his colleague, who knows how to pass the ball to himself, because you can shoot the ball with one hand and you can control the rocket by moving the controllers midair. So he would punch it one direction and then use the other rocket to kind of meet that wherever he shot it. And so he's basically playing as two people as one. And that's the kind of thing where you go, okay, there's definitely depth to that. If you want to put the hours into it. So that's exciting. I'm keen to see how it does. It seemed quite popular at Gamescom. They had a public booth where people could try it out. And I heard lots of people were kind of queuing up for it. So it'll be interesting to see what that's like, and good that it's on every headset and free. Love that.
Yeah, I'm seeing people reminded of Riggs. I'm looking at that and seeing a little bit of Knock, because that's similar.
Yeah.
Similar kind of thing, but Knock, I think, is a paid game, and I'm curious if free to play is going to make this one stand out.
We tried some of Knock as well when it came out, and I mean, we ran into problems because we had high latency between America and the US, but what I found interesting with that comparison is that Nock is like, it's so smooth locomotion. You're gliding everywhere and jumping, and I got sick pretty fast. I'm pretty sure you did too. Whereas this is designed not to have that at all. You kind of teleport between set points, and it's much more stationary for that reason. So that's another interesting comparison, I think, between the two of them.
Hmm. Yeah, yeah, I'm seeing Onokaze saying it's Nock without the cool skate locomotion and jumping. Yeah,
yeah, it kind of depends on what you... And the interesting thing that this has that Nock doesn't is that once you shoot your kind of rocket hand out, you've got the kind of movement midair. It's interesting. It's like two different approaches to the same kind of, you know, thing.
I'm reminded of Echo Arena. I know it's like they're very different games when you start comparing to Echo Arena, but
yeah,
I'd be curious to see if Echo Arena ever makes it to other headsets, you know, other standalone systems, because it's the similar free-to-play model, team-based sport.
I love Echo Arena. And I just play it enough.
How many free-to-play games can the VR market sort of sustain? Like, how many communities are really out
there? Interesting too, because when you go free to play on other existing like flat screen stuff like PlayStation or Xbox, there's a huge player base that is there, you know, to play it. Whereas on this stuff, it's kind of like, it's still, I mean, loads of people have headsets, but it's still not quite the same scale by any means. So it's interesting because they're kind of taking these systems from other, you know, that's the other thing, is it has a battle pass, you know, that Fortnite has kind of propagated across the entire industry. So that's, it's free. And the battle pass, you can play as much as you want, but the battle pass, or it's actually called the Ulti Pass, will give you, they said, new paint jobs, cosmetic enhancements to personalize the mechs. So yeah, it's really going for that Fortnite model that's everywhere now. Yeah. Well, before we get really into the Gamescom impressions, I do want to also just go over some releases coming out this month, since it's basically the beginning of the month that we're doing this. I figured we'll talk about what we know. So obviously Ultimex, I just mentioned September 15. We've got out today, we've got Deism, which has moved over from App Lab. Originally it was on SideQuest, I believe, to App Lab. Now it's on the Quest 4. Oh yeah, I don't know. Yeah, how it, are you? It's, yeah,
deity simulator.
Deity. Oh DSM. Yeah, but there is an I between the S and the M, isn't there? Yeah, yeah. Oh wow, right. There you go.
I'm standing up for that game, right?
My apologies. Right. Terrible. Well, that's correct. I always miss things like that. D Onikaze is saying deism. My mind just sees a word and decides how to pronounce it, and then I don't think about that again for like 6 months, and then I realize I've been saying it.
I saw someone complain. I saw the developer of DSM talking about the pronunciation on Twitter right before coming in here,
No.
So it was like fresh in my head. Like I still don't. The correct pronunciation wasn't listed on that tweet, but they were.
Oh, okay.
Everyone gets this wrong, so don't feel too bad.
Okay, good. But yeah, that's out on main Quest store now. Then we have 4VR Cornhole, which is also out today. Into the Radius for Quest 2.
Wait, we got
to say something.
We got to talk about the fact that I met Heaney for the first time, David Heaney, and we sat in an American restaurant, and they had professional cornhole being played on TV in the corner, and Heaney refused to believe it was a real American sport, like it's a real game people played, and he's like, I need video evidence. I need like proof in order to take it back to his people in Northern Ireland, because convinced that cornhole was not a real game.
I really don't actually really know what cornhole is. I had no of it. Please
give
me that.
All right. I honestly didn't know this was the name of the game, but you've got a board sitting on over there on the other side of the room with holes in it, or one hole. And you've got to throw a bag into the hole. It's very much like horseshoes.
Oh, I do know this.
You've heard of horseshoes,
right? Yeah,
but
that's just like a party game. That's cool. Okay, I just, as you said, I did not know the name for that, but there you go. Good to know. Then we've also got Into the Radius, which was out on PC VR earlier, but is coming to Quest 2 on September 8th. Ancient Dungeon, another app that was on App Lab for Quest, is coming to the main store on September 15th. Then, as I mentioned, Ultimex and Requisition VR, which goes into early access on the 23rd. So now onto the main event, which is the kind of purpose of this episode, the Gamescom special. I've tried so many things. I have so many impressions to give.
I'm very excited to hear. We were talking about Tilt 5, right? That's right at the top of your list here.
That's right at the top of my list. Yeah.
Yeah. Harry, I've talked about Tilt 5 for the longest time. I've praised it. I've talked about how it's got high potential. I've followed. There's an interview with Jerry Ellsworth on our channel where she's the CEO over there. And she talked about getting fired from Valve. But in her firing meeting with Gabe Newell, she asked to buy the patents and the work and the all the work that they had done on this approach to AR. And he said, okay. And she had to come up with the funds for lawyers to make it all legal. But all there's patents and stuff backing up what Tilt 5 is doing. And here we are all these years later.
It's a very like Gabe Newell. It fits with the Gabe Newell law as well. It just makes sense to me. So basically Tilt 5, for those who don't know, you can see the glasses on the screen here. It's a pair of AR glasses, but with a very specific use case. So it has a board that sits on generally like a dining table or a table in front of you. Because various different sizes you can get the board in. And the board is made out of reflective material. I think it was Jerry that described it to me as basically like on a high-vis vest, you've got that kind of reflective, so those strips, and it's like that. And it doesn't look like that in the photos. But when you see it in person, it has got this kind of sheen to it. And unlike other AR headsets where they're projecting stuff through the lenses, basically from the headset, this actually projects a tiny, tiny amount of light. Jerry talked very a lot about how it's so efficient because of the small amount of light it projects. Projects light out from a headset down onto the board, which then reflects it back to the lens, which is a crazy kind of concept. It's so different to everything else. It's wild that it works. It kind of feels like magic when you try it. And so what you get is this kind of hologram looking board that can be, it can go above the board, you can have things built on top of it, or it can also kind of sink into the board and look like it's, you know, sunken into the table or whatever it's playing on. It's really quite amazing. One of those things that I wanted to try for a very long time and hadn't had the chance to yet. And then that was one of the ones I was like, I'm booking this in, I want to do it. And it lived up to exactly what I hoped it would be. It's really, really so awesome. And there's so many different ways. I think the thing that really stuck with me is that when you talk to everyone who's tried it out or knows about it, everyone has like a different idea of what they can do with it or what they would do with it. You know, there were certain things I was like, oh, I'd love to, for some reason, my mind went to, I'd love to have this on my desk while I was working and have it almost as like a control panel for something like Photoshop or graphic stuff and just be able to quickly change things or put things down on it. And you know, you can do modeling, you can get 3D models on it and play with them and stuff. That's where my mind went to. Other people I know have done stuff like tabletop games, RP, you know, role-playing games. One really awesome example that Jerry was talking about was a dungeon master who had programmed it so that players with high perception could see threats like a poison cloud on the board when they were playing, but those who didn't have had low perception couldn't see it through their headsets. So you can actually use it to really not just create a world and a playing area, but really enhance the game. There's so many cool things. And then there's lots of just, you know, they're bringing over a lot of Steam games that are like flat screen that they're now being kind of ported over. I tried this one. Let me see if I can get the photo. Where is it? I just uploaded it. It's really cool. It's on a little planet and it's like 3D planet, like a twin stick shooter. Here it is.
The battle planet.
That's it. Yeah. So it's like this kind of globe that you can walk around and the globe like rotates as you walk around. And it is just like a twin stick kind of shooter thing. But that was like, I was like, oh, this is quite cool. I could see myself playing this, especially like co-op with two people sitting around. So yeah, it's like awesome AR. It's yeah.
So I've noted this in your draft here.
Yes.
The only thing about this is proof of concept of the Mixcast support, right? So you can hook up the Tilt 5 now, I think, to Mixcast and have basically a mixed reality display so that people watching on a TV, your game session, can see what's going on. But the problem with Tilt 5, the limitation is this whole board right at the side is going to be cut off. Everything right here is going to be cut off.
So you wouldn't see the stuff past there. Yeah.
But you could have things floating above. The thing that I've always loved about this is you could lean over the table and like look way down, and you could have a whole like real portal into the table. But it's when you get to that edge, you kind of end up with that sense of field of view, right? Like, so you get this expansive field of view that feels comparable to a modern VR headset, but the trade-off is the edge of this board, which you could extend out if you have like more of the
modular.
Of the board.
You
there.
you could get 9 of these and put them together if you wanted to. Then you'd just be limited by what you can see in the field of view of what it kind of, you know, how what the headset is, which I think that would become more obvious if you had 9 boards. You know, you'd look at it from afar and you'd see part of it. But anyway, but yeah, so this would be like cut off. That's not to say you don't get depth, because obviously you can, the way it works is you can still get depth and whatever, but yeah, the edges will be kind of cut off. But that's the other thing, is the mixed cast thing is super cool. I saw that in action as well. And my mind went to like, you know, I think what it's being used for at the moment is a lot of Twitch streams and stuff. You know, if someone's playing a game, you can have that view up on the Twitch stream so that people can see everyone sitting around the board doing things on Twitch. But I was also like, that'd be awesome if you had like a board game cafe or something, right? And you had a Tilt 5 set up, and then you had a big TV behind it so everyone in the cafe can see what's going on the board, but people are actually playing it. There's so many things like that. I think that's the thing, is although it's like quite a limited like form of AR and that you're restricted to this board, within that there's like so much potential.
Yeah.
And it's good enough, that the AR tech is good enough and really awesome to use, that, you know, for that use case, it's pretty amazing, you know.
The cafe use case that you just talked about is such an interesting idea, right? Like, we've talked to them a couple of times, and we've got Stephanie in our comments. I think she's with Tilt 5. So if you've got any Tilt 5 questions, that is a person to put it to. But like, the thinking about them attaching a PC underneath the table, and they're working on drivers, a system to drive multiple glasses from a single computer. That could be a path to like a really, really, really cool arcade or like location-based setup, right? You could rent out a table for an hour or two and have your, you know, have your food and meal around this table and play a game that is just so immersive. And you don't need a huge library of games to make that a really compelling experience. You could have, you know, animated versions of traditional games. But I can't wait to see what comes of Tilt 5 over the long term. The one thing I will mention is Demio. If you're out in our comments watching us, I think you can go out there and guilt Resolution Games into bringing Demio to this. I think you can pressure them politely. But we want Demio on this. I think Tilt 5 wants Demio on this.
Ian, everyone wants Demio on this. That's the whole world wants Demio on this system. In fact, we talked about this when I was doing the demo. We were talking, you know, about Demio, how good it would be. And then directly after my Tilt 5 demo, I had a meeting with Resolution, with Tommy and Paul from Resolution. So I was like, oh, I was just down at Tilt 5. How have you tried that? Have you thought about Demio? And they were just kind of like, ha, 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 ha. I was like, we'll get you. But that's a great example of like that cafe example too, right? Of like, sit down, rent a board for like an hour in a cafe with some food, play like 2 hours of Demio, and then you got the big screen up and everyone can see the people playing it as well. That's like a very good visual game to watch as well. I just think that it's such so awesome, and it works so well that even if like we had actual AR, you know, kind of, we've talked a lot of, in my article that will probably go live later today, we've talked a lot about how other companies are trying to kind of make, you know, compelling broad consumer AR that just works in a very different sense to this, of just you're overlaying things everywhere. Even if we had some version of that, what I think is so interesting about this is that it forces you to kind of, that constraint forces you to be creative and, you know, think of all these different ways you could use it. It's almost like, it's a bit like, you know, I don't know. It's sometimes I think if we had AR, it's like a whole different design thing of how do I design for AR then? Whereas this is like, okay, this is AR that works really well, but it's like on a tabletop and you're adapting tabletop stuff to that. It's kind of, I think it's brilliant for given where kind of everything is at, what they are. The other thing I'll say too is I think it was Chris that said, Chris said Battle Planet is a flat screen game, which I didn't mention. It is exactly, it's an existing flat screen game. I think it was on PC and consoles and Switch and stuff, and they ported it over. And so, yeah, there's lots of games that
Catan. Catan's coming in early 2023, and there's, I think, Mark's Magnificent Marble Maze has Tilt 5 support.
We did a demo. I tried that out briefly. Yeah,
and those are on Steam, so like you can get Steam games running on Tilt 5, which is such a cool thing to think that there's already the bones for AR support.
Loads
there.
Of games you could port over like that. You know, like that. Lots of top-down stuff would be perfect. So many similar games to this. There's just lots of opportunity, I think. And I think, I hope, and it looks hopeful that that's only going to get kind of better and better. But yeah, that was the awesome.
I want to just one more thing on the cafe idea, right? Like, we tried Sandbox VR recently, and I've tried some Sandbox VR before COVID, but we tried Sandbox VR quite recently, and it was Heaney, me, and Kyle going through a Sandbox Star Trek experience, and we all came out just miserable because the performance on whatever system they had, whether it was the hardware, the tracking, or the software not optimized, but there was something really, really wrong with our particular demo. And we all came out not feeling great from this particular Sandbox experience. And what struck me about it was this was a random spot in like Ohio that had a Sandbox VR place. And there are Sandbox VR locations everywhere. And it was busy. There were a lot of people going through this random Sandbox.
A lot of people coming out sick, presumably, right?
Yeah, but like it's not a great experience. Like there was problems with it that yet still it will blow a lot of people away, right? If that's your first VR experience, you're still gonna be full body and walking around. It could be impressive, but it'll also make people sick. The thing that is just what gets me there is a lot of VR locations everywhere. Is the opportunity bigger for something like this than there is for those like Sandbox VR locations?
I think two things on that note is that Chris has said the big thing for board gamers would be eliminating setup and teardown times, which this is so quick to like get into a game and set up. And even still with a lot of location-based VR stuff, there's setup and kind of explanation needed. Whereas this is really just like put the glasses on. You can understand how to use that controller very quickly. So there's, I think, a lot less context needed for that. And also, what was I going to say? Oh, Onikaze said, I wonder how durable the reflective surface is. I know Jerry told me that and demonstrated to me, at least like everything was designed to be very, very durable. Like the glasses may look almost dainty, but they're not. They're made out of like soft plastic that's almost like a toy. You know, she bent one of the stems on the glasses to show me that you can kind of, she was like, I want you to be able to sit on it and it will be, you know, fine. So I'm not sure exactly how durable the reflective stuff of the board is, but I'm pretty sure it's quite, I think they were saying, you know, you can wipe it down and kind of, it's not like it's a precious, you know, so precious that you have to be like, you know, super, super careful. You can definitely wipe it down and roll it up and yeah.
.com's comment that I don't see why the two being VR and AR locations wouldn't live side by side, but only AR would have players buying rounds of drinks.
That's
and
true.
That's very true, right? You could be
from a business perspective too. Yeah,
yeah.
You can serve stuff with it. Yeah, very, very true. So that was Tilt 5. Tilt 5's awesome. It is available. They're still saying pre-order, which you know, it had a Kickstarter. Jerry told me that most of the Kickstarter backers, you know, they've almost finished shipping to those. And you can pre-order on the site now. Pre-order kind of meaning it's available to order, but, you know, there's long delays of kind of, they've got constraints on shipping and whatever.
Stephanie with Tilt 5 out there saying that you can wipe down the board with Windex, and I have had chicken wing grease on my board.
Yeah, so you
that's the true test. Yeah, that is the ultimate test.
So you can spill things on it. Yeah, it's pretty in terms of you know, spillage. I guess that's good for a cafe. But that was just one of the many things that I tried at Gamescom. There was so many. So I'm kind of, you know, going to sweep through some of these. We'll give impressions, and we can kind of stop where we feel appropriate. Another big one that I tried that I think a lot of people are kind of looking forward to was Hellsweeper VR, which is coming out, I believe it's later this year. I'll have to double check that. But by the same developers as Sorrento, it's kind of a Sorrento follow-up or a spiritual successor. This was a lot of fun. I was surprised at how much fun I had with this. There's going to be a couple of different game modes. There will be like a, I believe it's like a roguelike game mode, a co-op mode, an endless mode, and there was another one. Maybe it's like a sandbox or something. I can't remember. But sounds really awesome. I tried it on PC VR, and what I really loved about it was you can kind of make a, put together a build of depending on what weapons you want to use, like a bow, a sword, a mace, and there's also magic. And you kind of assign them to different directions on the controller in terms of gestures. So, you know, if you swipe outwards in either hand, it brings out a sword, or you go up, it brings up a fireball. And then you can combine them together. So you can go out for a sword, up for a fireball, and smash the fireball onto the sword. And then you got a flaming sword, or make a flaming bow, or a ice bow, where you can get two fireballs and do that thing where you put them together and shoot them. It's kind of like meant for you to make these wacky combinations, which is really fun. It is very intense in terms of locomotion. You'll be doing jumping, you know, double jumping, triple jumping, dashing. So it is really an intense title, but looked awesome as well. That the enemy design was really cool to see. It was very cool, the enemy design. So I have positive things to say about that. That was a lot of fun. Ian, are you interested in this?
I'm excited for this one. This one looks, gory and scary, and yeah, brutal, which is going to be a lot of players. So that's going to be a big audience, I think, for that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The other thing I tried, which is also a Vertigo Games, was at the Vertigo Games booth, is Pathcraft, which was a very, very different kind of game. But I had a really nice time with it. It's basically a little kind of puzzle game where this little creature walks back and forth and he gets stuck. And you can place these blocks, as you're seeing here, to help him get from one end to the other. Or if you put a block in the wrong area, he'll fall off or he'll get stuck or stuff like that. Or you can toggle blocks on and off. Looks like, you know, it's a pretty basic concept you've probably seen other things do, but it was really fun and immersive to play. It also had hand tracking support, which needed a little bit of work from when I tried it, but it was nice to see that it had both hand tracking and controllers because it's pretty simple, you know, just placing blocks and whatever. I played it all with hand tracking. And what the really other cool thing is that there's going to be a level editor as well, which it's exactly the kind of game that would benefit from that. You know, there's, I think it's launching with a couple of different like environments and worlds and levels within them, but I can totally see people, you know, going in and building their own kind of really complicated levels. So yeah, that was enjoyable. I liked that one.
Is that something that could work with pass-through and AR pretty well?
Oh, I'm sure it could. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's all these beautiful kind of hand drawn environments in the background that look great, but I'm sure you could take out the main kind of puzzle bit would work a bit like cubism or something. You could put it down on a table or, you know, different areas totally. So yeah, that's high potential with that one. Another one, which was a really small game that I don't think almost anybody had heard about before it was on the kind of show floor, was Silhouette. And this is a really cool, I'll probably have an article going up on this later today. It's by Team Panoptic, which did, there was an asymmetrical PC VR game, I think called Panoptic or something like that. But this is a hand tracking game that is super interesting because it's not about like necessarily about picking things up or interacting with objects. They kind of take a different approach, which I had never even considered, which is there's this big spotlight area that you can see on the screen, and your hand makes a shadow that helps get this little creature, like a shadow creature, from A to B in different ways. So you can pick the creature up, like make a bridge so they can get across. Similar to Pathcraft sometimes, that they're walking between two points, and you can go, okay, I've made a bridge for you, and they'll use your hand shadow to walk across. Or, you know, get them to walk on your hand and then lift your hand up to a section like this. Was super interesting, different approach to hand tracking that I really loved because you didn't have any of that. There was a lot of talk at GamesCon about like, how do we do hand tracking properly? I've got a big talk with the Alchemy Labs guys that will form a piece probably next week. But there's a lot of talk from them, from others about like, how do we do hand tracking properly? And this is just such a different approach of like, okay, there are some like object interactions, pulling levers and stuff, but it's mainly like use your hands to make shadows and the shadows affect things in different ways. Like there's another image, where is it? This one here, where you can see you make like a finger gun shadow, and then it projects a gun that you can use to like shoot down things on the shadow environment to clear passages and stuff. Some really cool creative ways, or like stopping streams of water with the shadow and that kind of thing. So it's a very, very interesting, different approach that I hadn't really
Sounds
considered
delightful.
That was cool. Yeah, it was really awesome. And that is coming to the main quest store next Q1 2023, I believe, is the kind of target they're going for, which is awesome. Let me have a look at the chat. What's we got any? So next up, I'm running through these. There's so many. Silhouette, We Are One was another game I tried, which is being published by Fast Travel Games. I tried it at their booth. Really cool. We've kind of seen bits of this before, and it was interesting because the comparison that you would immediately make is to The Last Clockwinder, which I played recently and did a review of, and I really loved that because it's similar in that it's about cloning yourself, or you know, performing actions that get repeated in VR, and then you know you're doing time loops and embodying different characters and looping things and chucking things to one another. You kind of mentioned that to the devs, and they were like, "Oh, it's kind of frustrating because you know we've been developing at the same time. They beat us by like you know they came out a month ago or whatever." But this is actually quite different because it's a shooter, not a puzzle game mainly. There's puzzle elements to it, but it's really like it's more about, okay, I'm recording one loop. I have to avoid a bullet. I have to shoot this enemy, then chuck my gun. And then as the next loop, I'll pick up the gun and shoot it. And then I have to think about where everything goes. So there's more of a kind of super hot element to it in how you're avoiding things and you know, it's kind of a combination between that and this time loop mechanic that we've seen in other things. But I really liked I love this kind of time loop stuff and this and that feeling of being like, okay, I want to do this like perfectly and record the perfect loop and then record the perfect second loop and have this really efficient. And there's something really fun about, you know, that's been done in other games, flat screen games. There's something really fun with both this and The Last Clockwinder about doing those time loops like physically and then watching them play out and interact with each other. So yeah, I really enjoyed playing this. Excited to play more. Yeah.
Both this one and the last one, Silhouette, the game mechanics just spark so many ideas. And
yeah,
obviously execution is going to be different from game to game, but I it's so much fun to see these game designs move forward, right? Like these new ideas get mm-hmm. built on year in and year out. And both of these look like they're building on ideas that we've seen previously but not executed quite like this, and I'm really curious to see if we see a lot more build on these ideas. Like this has until next year to keep building this out, and it is such a cool idea. I hope they do really well.
Yeah Another this is actually kind of some breaking news because it's just been announced before we went live about an hour beforehand, but I tried this on the floor. This is Mixture, which is a game from a studio called Play With Fire. I did a demo with one of the developers. I think the main developer, his name's Igor. He's very, very lovely. Very, very interesting, cool stuff in this. I think based on my demo, it needs a little bit of work. There were a few bugs and stuff, you know, that need to be kind of tinkered with and maybe some make it a bit more visible for certain mechanics and things. But I really love the concept. And basically, you're kind of controlling two characters at once here. You're playing as a kind of a room scale person with hands, and then with your controllers, you're controlling this moth knight character. And it's kind of like Moss in that, you know, you're doing that platforming kind of thing with a bit of hack and slash, but there's a dynamic camera, so it moves along. If you're moving along a certain area, you will move with the little knight character. And the other element and why it's called Mixture is that, as you can see here, it's about collecting these kind of, you know, gems and minerals around the environment. And so while you're playing this platformer, you're also managing this kind of, I'm collecting minerals and I'm combining them into little potions that I can chuck down to affect things. So it's a cool little, I guess, hybrid of different genres. It takes some things from Moss, it takes some things from other stuff. But it was really promising, cool idea. Some of the environments are really impressive. It's got a very distinct visual style. So that's really awesome. I believe that's also, it was, I tried it on Quest. It's coming, I think, to the Quest store. I have to double check exactly when or what window they announced. But yeah, that was really cool as well. Nice to see. I mean, a lot of these are very kind of indie games. I know Fast Traveler Publishing, we are one, but that's, you know, Silhouette, this. There's a couple of others that are really, there was some really nice kind of smaller level stuff as well, which was nice to see. What else have we got? Oh, Aspyr 2. I also had a try, which was a funny one because the studio that makes Aspyr, Tripwire, is actually from Melbourne. They're about 15 minutes down the road, and we had never actually met until we were in Germany. We were kind of laughing about how we went halfway across the world to do a demo of a game that was being developed 15 minutes away. But very cool. I really enjoyed this one. I'm keen to play it when it comes out. I played, I think this is the, there's one, I played kind of a beginning level. I tried both characters. There's two characters in this one, a really small, tiny character. His name's, I think it's like Shooty or something. He's a very kind of smaller character. And the way they've designed the levels is really awesome because you can play through as either that's the small guy and that's the big guy. And when you play as the small character, you notice things in the levels that you didn't, you know, it's the same exact level, but you notice things like, I was walking along, and because it's only about the height of a bench, I noticed like ammo underneath the bench that I didn't notice when I was taller and bigger. There's cool little design things like that where you can approach, you know, the levels in different ways. And the one thing that stuck out to me about this was they've used they've worked with Meta to use the voice commands API in a way that others just seemingly have not. So instead of it just being like, hey, Facebook or whatever those kind of commands are, you can do some really cool stuff where you have to be connected to the internet because it sends, you go like, put your hands up to a guard, and it sends that to Meta's servers and interprets what you actually mean, not just what you said, but it interprets the intent. So you can say things in different ways. You don't have to say set phrases. And, you know, they've worked with Meta to get the time down on how quickly they can do that. And then it comes back and the guards will react. So you can say things like, put your hands up or get your hands in the air. And then they'll put their hands in the air, or you can be like, freeze, or stuff like that. And I tried it out and it did work. And that was a really cool thing that I hadn't seen used. I wasn't, frankly, wasn't even aware that voice commands thing was, you could use it in that way as part of like a game mechanic. That was really cool to try out.
I can't wait to see how that big and small game mechanic plays out. It reminds me of a Game Jam game that came out, I want to say the Gear VR days, years and years ago, where you do go play as like a cat and a mouse. And the mouse can kind of crawl through tunnels.
Yeah,
the cat
similar
is
stuff.
Hunting around for the mouse, and it was brilliant. And it was such a great game design idea back then, and it didn't really take off. Like, I didn't see many people do that kind of scaling thing. I know there was Half and Half had one of its mini games where you could be a giant chasing around little people are hiding places, but. You know, It's not a mechanic that's used too often.
No, and it was really cool. And it's the two characters too are also like with the big guy, you can kind of run in a bit more. It's a stealth game, but if you want to play, you know, guns blazing, you kind of can. Whereas it's a lot, you know, with the smaller character, if you pick up the big machine gun, he can't actually control it. It'll just kind of go mental because the recoil is crazy for his little body. So you have to take a different approach, and you use like the voice commands and stuff to route people around in different areas. It felt like it wasn't just like a gimmick. It felt like there was actual significant design stuff at play to let you play through as both and, you know, do things in different ways. That was really, really cool.
Zimtalk's comment saying, I saw the vents and thought I'd take an Alien versus Predator 2 game, including multiplayer, please. Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, I like that idea of being the aliens were hiding around at vents. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can be predators too. Gosh, there's a Predator game, Hunting Grounds, I think it is. And I saw a Predator game, an officially licensed Predator game in, you know, Fox's labs at one point in Los Angeles, where, you know, they had gone through the effort of trying to put Predator in VR. And it was right during that period of downturn where it became very clear the PC VR market wasn't going to support enough of an audience to really sustain games like that. And I think that game probably ended up being that Predator, you know, flat screen game. But yeah, those are other franchises, right? We know we've got the Aliens game, from Servios that's on the way. But yeah, yes. Predators.
I keep forgetting about that game. One because that just kind of was announced without many details. Yeah, no, that would be very cool. And the other thing I was going to say about Aspyr 2 is that you can. It has a co-op mode, which I didn't get to try, but I might be able to try soon, where I believe one of you plays as the small and one of you plays as the large character. So that'd be very cool. I'm looking forward to that. The other one that I tried, the next thing, is Hubris, which I haven't got a video for, but it's the stunning-looking game that... let me get this. I'll get this photo up. This is actually, I think, from the section I tried. Oh, that's the beginning that I tried. I did two demos, basically. There's been a demo that's been available for a while that's kind of the intro and the beginning of the game. I did that second. I tried the kind of Gamescom one first, which was this new demo for Gamescom, which focused on, they said it took place, I think, a couple of hours into the game, and you've got kind of upgraded weapons, and it's a kind of combat-based thing where you're going through this space-looking, rocky kind of canyon. And shooting down drones and collecting stuff. Really, really fun. The gun mechanics felt really solid and fun to play. And also it looks, I mean, you can get an idea of how it looks by looking at this screenshot. It looked like stunning. Really high detail. Reminded me of sections of like Half-Life Alyx and that same kind of, you know, just looking at a rock looks really cool to look at. It feels like a really detailed rock. That kind of same awe you get from elements in Alyx, like tiny kind of minuscule things. So that was, it was really awesome to play through that. The combat was really fun. Then I went back and played through this section where that's the kind of intro. You land on this planet with water and there's also this really fun, and I was so not expecting this to be fun because usually they're the worst part of any game on any platform, but water kind of levels and water mechanics, really awesome. You kind of do this breaststroke thing where if you go like push down, you'll actually, it works really well in VR because it's similar to kind of swimming in that you push down and you'll go up and, you know, it feels very natural because if you know how to, you know, swim breaststroke, you know how to swim in VR. So you kind of do these 3D water, you know, navigation bits, which are actually really, really fun to do and look quite stunning. I played on PC VR. It is coming to Quest 2. I asked them about what it might look like on Quest 2 and performance, and they basically said that they've got, I think, the first section up and running. They're pretty confident they can get it, you know, running and going on Quest as well. So, yeah, I was really, really, really surprised and pleased by this. It doesn't just look amazing. And actually, there's some cool mechanics with the guns, cool swimming stuff as well. Yeah.
Be curious about this one. Yeah, I want to hear more about it.
Yeah, and the other thing is too, I think they've done a whole bunch of mocap stuff with actors in it. So the faces look quite amazing and kind of the animations are really tangible. So it's an interesting another sci-fi one. There's some interesting sci-fi stuff coming out. It's interesting to see this too placed next to Red Matter 2, same kind of sci-fi adventure style game. This is a bit more kind of narrative focused and shooter focused, but interesting because I would love to see what this will look like and how it'll perform on Quest given Red Matter 2 has set that kind of benchmark. And I just wonder because as much as I love how Red Matter 2 looks, I think it was designed very specifically with Quest in mind of like, how do we design around this to make these environments look huge but are still very much doable. Whereas this feels like it's being designed for PC VR and then being ported over to Quest. I don't know what their design decisions are, obviously, but that's what it feels like playing it. So it'd be interesting to see what that Quest version ends up looking like and how it performs. Yeah. Let me get my notes back up. Where are we?
I saw our commenters talking about Grand Theft Auto San Andreas with the prediction that they think it would be out in October, which I think the reason that prediction is out there is because we know Mark Zuckerberg recently said to Joe Rogan that the next device from them is out in October. So that points to Quest Pro very likely launching in October. And Meta does have a history. I think it was the Immortal Games, Vader Immortal Games, or just launching stuff right after they do their Kinect announcements. So there's a very good reason to kind of just drop that.
Most Quest games this year have just dropped unexpectedly. I mean, you know, a lot of the games have been like, it's the week before and they're like, it's coming out next week, or it's just dropped and no one kind of, people knew it was in development but didn't know when it was coming. So yeah, they could. That would be interesting. Cambria and GTA available now, or Quest Pro. So where are we? Hubris. Oh, Everslord. So Everslord Invasion. I hadn't played the original Everslord. Let me get a photo up for this. I hadn't played the original Everslord, but I played this new kind of co-op one that's made for Quest. It was a lot of fun. Really cool. It reminded me a little bit of, weirdly, In Death. In Death Unchained. Not that it's in any way like an archery game or anything, but just the kind of almost, I don't know if it's, In Death is very gothic, and it was, I wouldn't say it was gothic, but these kind of very cool mystical environments, kind of creepy looking environments. And it's a co-op game. You play it with you and another player, and you've got the hook shot from Everslort, which can kind of reel you in. It's a very, again, it's similar to Hellsweep, but it's a very intense locomotion game. Can, you know, pull you in really quickly to enemies or pull you into your ally. And you've also got a kind of gun on one hand, and then you've got typical melee weapons and whatever. And so, yeah, you're in these big expansive spaces, waves of enemies come through, and you have to work with your partner to make sure that you're covering each other and whatnot. But that was good fun. I'm keen to try more of that. There was a bit of Boneworks kind of thing going on with the weapons where, you know, the harder you hit, you know, the harder you hit it, the more damage it does. If you act it out, it does, it works better. And if you hit that on the, you know, even with the sword, they were like, you got to make sure you hit on the, not the blunt side of the sword, make sure you get the, not the flat. There was some interesting stuff there. I'll be keen to try more of that. That was quite fun. That was another, again, being published by Fast Travel Games. And then my very last demo of the week, and at that point I was pretty exhausted. It was on the Friday afternoon, as were the developers. You know, we got into this demo and we're like, oh my God, we're all so tired. Because this was the very last thing that I did. Drop Dead the Cabin, which is really awesome. Really loved that. It's basically a new co-op. Obviously, Drop Dead has been on Quest for ages and various different devices for so long. And this new one is basically taking it off rails. And as the name suggests, you're in a cabin and you basically kill zombies with your partner to kind of, it's a little bit like a roguelike. It's got roguelike elements to it, but it's not really a roguelike. But you're basically in this cabin unlocking new rooms. You know, the rooms have big clamps on them. I never played COD Zombies, but I described it to my roommate and he was like, oh, that sounds like a lot like COD Zombies. So I'm sure someone in chat who's played COD Zombies can compare. But, you know, you start in this small living room with some weapons and some ammo. You kill a few zombies and each zombie is like a point. And then once you've killed five, there's a room you can unlock that you put your hand on that unlocks the next room. And then you get into, you know, there's rooms that cost loads and loads of points because you've obviously got to kill loads of zombies. So you're not expected to do it the first time. In that way, it's like a roguelike. You kind of are meant to come back and play again and again, unlock new rooms. It's kind of, I think, procedural as well. Some things change, you know, locations of weapons and stuff changes, rooms change and whatever. And there's obviously areas around this cabin that's like, you know, generators that you got to keep online to keep the electricity going. I was playing with one of the devs and I was doing terribly and he obviously knew how to play the game perfectly. And the generator went down and it was dark and it was so much harder to play all of a sudden. There's some really cool, I really loved this. It was one of the ones that I was like, oh, I would love to play this. For me, the mark of a good co-op game is like, would I play this with my housemate who occasionally dabbles in VR? You know, there's things where I'll be like, do you want to play this together? If it's the kind of game where I feel like I could bring him in, even though he's not like a full VR person. Another one was like Demio. We did that together. I can see us playing this. It was a lot of fun. And it also uses the meta avatars as well. So, you know, it would, if we were playing, we would look like this. There's a lot of ways, you know, that I can see that kind of expanding out in the future. It's very cool. It was a fun zombie kind of zombie wave roguelike kind of mashup and awesome visuals too. They described it as, I think they said, it was like Stranger Things crossed with like something as two other great kind of very reference points they use. But it has got that kind of Stranger Things 80s kind of throwback vibe to it. They're not realistic zombies. They're kind of glowing blue and, you know, have cool elements about them. So that was one that I was kind of, I guess didn't know what to expect going in, whether I'd love it or not, and I really, really liked it. So I'm looking forward to that. I think release date is, I'm not sure if they've set a release date yet. I think it's just coming soon or end of this year or next year or something like that. But yeah, so definitely keep an eye out for that one. I would highly recommend that based off what I played. Yeah. Anything to say on that before we move on?
Yeah, well, I just kept thinking of Left 4 Dead, but I know it's a different kind of, you know, outdoors running around versus indoors, but like the
whole idea is kind of similar. Yeah. In the same way that I guess After the Fall is kind of similar to,
and it's, that's the other thing is it's an overcrowded genre, right? But it's still,
it is, co-op, but I think, yeah, can,
there's room for more good co-op. I guess.
I played a bit of After the Fall as well, like their new map, I think earlier that day or the day before, as part of the kind of Vertigo game stuff. And I actually would say I preferred the concept of like this one only because it felt a bit more like, I don't know, with VR multiplayer, I tend to lean towards stuff that's less of a commitment of like having to come back to it and do it a lot. And the impression I get from After the Fall is like, you know, you want to be kind of coming back, earning upgrades, playing things again. Whereas this felt like, oh, I can jump into this for a few rounds every now and then. It'll always be different. It'll just be a bit of fun. It felt kind of more casual, which I guess depends on, you know, depends on what you're looking for. But for me, that kind of scratched that particular itch for me.
I'm seeing a lot of discussion talking about Quest Pro. People are trying to figure out if Quest Pro is going to be optimized or there's going to be like games that are better on Quest Pro. And it's kind of hard for me to picture that happening. Mm. There was discussion about foveated rendering because we know eye tracking is going to be in there, but it's one of those things where I would have every expectation they're going to try to reserve some extra if they're able to get extra processing power out of that device. I'd imagine they try to reserve some of that for the system level features, right? Like if they can keep it parity with Quest 2, then use those extra cycles for having like a browser window that you could pull up in a game, right? Like I would love that if I could have a video playing in my corner, whatever size I want, while going around
or
and fighting zombies.
Or being able to keep a Twitch chat up or something while you're playing a game. That's a good point. And also, I think the thing to keep in mind with that too is that unlike Quest 2 and original Quest, this isn't replacing Quest 2. Even in the long run, it's meant to run alongside it. And it's also, from what we know, will be priced significantly higher to the point where you're not really aiming for the same people at that point. So it's not like you're kind of going, well, you know, this game is exclusive to Quest Pro. It's kind of like, well, you wouldn't expect them to do that because then you're pricing out a whole bunch of people.
That's a really good question, whether Meta would even allow that. I don't think they would even allow
that. No, surely. I would say sure. What I'm trying to say is that would be almost crazy, surely, for them to do that because it would just be like, even performance stuff aside, just that would mean so many people would not be able to afford, you know, if they said, God forbid, if they said GTA is exclusive to Quest Pro, it's like all of a sudden, well, it's like how many people are going to have Quest Pros compared to Quest 2s? Like, it's not going to be nearly the same. So I can't even imagine that being a thing. I would be so surprised. Anything
Glass
else?
Day Glass Day asking us a question about our studio here and how we record in third person, I think. We have a PC. We have a PC edition of this studio, which we put through OBS, and our developer, Heaney, has built virtual camera system, which we used to manually operate, but he built it so that it responds to voices. So right now the camera's on me, and when Harry starts speaking over there, it'll switch to another camera.
Camera, time to switch to me. Well, you know, we said this now. There we go. So it switches based on who's speaking predominantly.
I think we've got an Australia delay in our conversation, Harry.
Yeah.
I think we're, like 2 seconds or something.
It might be, yeah. Yes, as is there a delay with anything online with Australia. But anyway, two I want to talk about now, and we'll finish on the last one after we speak about something else. Broken Edge was another one that I tried, which was really fun to try. The developers are so passionate about this game, which is lovely to see, kind of to walk into a room and have them just be so excited to talk about the game to you and explain it things to you. Let me get this video up. So basically, this was announced, I believe it was it announced? I think it was announced at one of our showcases. I get confused what was announced where. But basically, it's like similar to the obvious comparison that keeps getting made is Iron Lights. After playing it, it is very, I would say, quite different from Iron Lights. But it's the concept of like, you know, we're trying to solve this problem of how do we have a sword fight in VR without, you know, clashing. You know, we can't actually clash. If your swords hit each other, it doesn't actually collide. You're going to go through each other because that's how VR works at the moment, right? So Iron Lights' approach to that problem was take turns almost, and one person was defending, one person was attacking, and you have to kind of go slowly and act things out, which I found kind of didn't really gel. It kind of made, took me out of things a bit playing it because, you know, I just want to get into it, not kind of have to think about how I act to accommodate for VR, I guess. This has some similar things, but it does some things very differently that I think work really well as well. First off, I think the art style is awesome and it's really beautiful color scheme and it's lovely to kind of and immersive to be in VR. The character designs are great as well. There's different classes you can play as with different abilities. But the thing that they kept coming back to with this when I was playing the demo is that they want everything to feel measurable in terms of like your impact, which is you can see when they when you hit the other person's sword, it cracks at that point you hit it and gives you a number of like 45 there, for example, which means you got, you know, the sword I think is like 100, a bit like a health bar. And so you can kind of degrade down their sword and you can tell how much damage you're doing. And then when it gets to the end and the sword is gone, they basically have one last chance to parry or you take a life off them. So that's kind of the core concept. And you both attack at the same time. You can attack and defend. And like parry or go for an attack or whatever. And then each class also has like stances or gestures that, you know, will make you do more damage. You know, like you can put the sword over your head, I think it was for the knight, and then swing down. And there's some stuff like that, that some cool gestures and things you can do to kind of add, you know, add on and bring value to each of the classes. So it's an interesting one. I only got about 5 or 10 minutes. It was fun. I'd love to play more of it. It's one of those games where I feel like you need more time to kind of understand each of the classes and stuff. But certainly, I think an interesting development compared to Iron Lights and what that.
I was surfing my Discords and I saw somewhere in some Discord somewhere. I think E. McNeil has started work on Iron Lights too, so I'd be curious to see where that game is in development.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely interesting. And the last thing to speak about, which is a very interesting one, is this new Alchemy Labs game, which is an announcement more than a demo. I didn't get to try anything. This is, you'll see the trailer up on the screen here in a second. The trailer really didn't give pretty much anything away, besides the fact that this is people using a Quest 2 and using their hands. But basically, Alchemy Labs, known for Job Simulator, Vacation Simulator, which are, of course, huge successes and very much focused on natural and really satisfying interactions in VR. They're making some kind of hand-tracking game. And I sat down with them and was kind of like, hey, that trailer didn't give away much. What's this game actually about? And they really didn't want to say. They kind of laughed and smiled through all the questions. They're giving nothing away in terms of content, except that it is multiplayer and it's hand-tracking. There was a bit of confusion between them and us on, you know, whether at first it we thought it might be hand tracking exclusive. Then they were like, no, we basically haven't decided how they explained to me in person. And I'll have a full feature on this. It got complicated. I have a full feature on their things of hand tracking next week, which was a fantastic conversation about how hand tracking works, what the best things are and whatnot. I just haven't had time to go through it yet. But in terms of this particular title, they said to me, you know, the developers are only using hand tracking in development. Like they're not allowed to use controllers. So it is being developed. The idea is it's being developed as a game designed for hand tracking.
Okay. So you said the thing, right? You said the key thing that, so I talked to Harry through this as he was, interviewing Alchemy and we reported out that they announced this new game, right? Alchemy is a founding developer of the VR community. And this is a team that got the earliest dev kits out of Valve, right? They were there at the earliest earliest time that Valve had dev kits to hand out to people. And it is hugely significant to hear that. They are that level of all-in on hand tracking, right? This is a team that has defined in many ways like interactions in VR. People have followed in their footsteps. You can see the influences of Job Simulator in a lot of other titles. That whole like playground idea of just playing with everything around you. And then here they are saying, okay, number one, we're making a multiplayer game. And number two, we're so all in on hand tracking, we're not even letting our developers use controllers in development. Yeah. Like, that is a bold statement to make.
Yeah. And it just seemed like the only reason they didn't want to kind of, they were like, they basically, although they're not using controllers now, I kind of got the impression that, although I suspect this will be a hand tracking exclusive game based off my conversation with them, you know, hypothetically, I think they still think maybe they could, at the very end of things, you know, add in controller support or something. I'm not sure. Which I guess you could, it's interesting because usually it's such the opposite way of like we design for controllers, then we think about adding hand tracking. It would be so interesting to see a game that was designed for hand tracking and then, you know, they go, okay, and it's got controller support, whatever that looks like. But yeah, so we don't know anything really about that. They did say some interesting things on like, they were talking about the states of hand tracking and talking about how using controllers is essentially like having two big oven mitts for hands. You know, you don't really have much precision. Whereas with hands and fingers with hand tracking, it's better for smaller things, which Andrew, the COO or COL, I believe, as he calls himself, he was like, you know, I was like, what's your favorite, like, what's your touchstone hand tracking experience on Quest then? And he said, oh, Cubism. And he was like, because it's perfect because you're picking up small pieces and it just fits almost better the controllers. And I kind of said Unplug. And he was like, yeah, Unplug is really good, but Cubism is like amazing because you're picking up these small little bits and pieces and it's specific. And then they kind of hinted at like, oh, you know, there's lots of states with your hand where you have your hand open and then you close your fist. And they're like, and there's lots of things in between that on the way to like closing your fist. And I was like, I have no idea what that means in terms of a a game. But I think they're thinking of this very differently to like, I'm picking things up and I'm, you know, they get the impression they really want to solve hand tracking in the same way they kind of gave a blueprint for you know, interactions in VR and that playground. And it feels like they were basically like, we want to do the same thing. We have to start now on hand tracking and push the industry forward and start this conversation on how we design around this, because that's what you're going to get people in headsets with, you know? So yeah,
that makes sense. I get what you're going with that, right? Like, they created a playground with Job Simulator, right? Where you could pick up the things around you and do a lot of unexpected things with all that material. Yeah. And right, like, you could have that same kind of silly discovery with the objects around you with just your open air hands. And to your point, right, like about controllers, you know, they've got half a decade of stuff sort of in their code base that they can bring to bear when they want to go and look at adapting to controller tracking after hand tracking. So it'll be really curious to see where they land on that. It's just also, you know, they've been at Google, right? They're a Google-owned company, and Google has had no VR hardware out there. I don't know. It's such a weird situation.
I constantly worry for Alchemy Labs because I know what Google's like. Google are the king of killing services and products and things. You know, one day you're using a Google thing and the next day it's gone. And I just constantly am like, oh.
Google Reader. Yeah, the internet's still not the same.
The list is, there's a great Twitter account for all our viewers called, it's called like, Has Google Killed This Yet? Or like, will, you know, Google Kill
Killed
Updates
by Google.
Or something. Killed by Google. And it's just like this person who's clearly very annoyed. Like, sometimes their own personal opinion comes through of like, of course this would happen. But it also is just like updates on services Google have killed, planned to kill, revived. And the list is endless.
I can't believe Google Voice is still alive after all these years. They still have somehow kept Google Voice on.
I mean, to me, it's like I click on the Google Apps tab on the profile. And I'm like, I don't know what half of these, I don't use half of these. And yet you've also killed other things that I did use. Google is wild in that way. But I worry for Alchemy. I'm always like, well, one day we might just wake up and Google woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and you know, it's a weird situation. But that's a separate topic. I'm very interested to see what this hand tracking game is and what it's like, and keep an eye out for the feature piece that I'll put up next week sometime that is this really super interesting in-depth discussion about hand tracking. So that's pretty much everything from Gamescom except one thing, which we'll get to at the end. We'll close out the show with that. Before that, we've got a little mini new segment, This Week in VR, which we don't know if this will be regular, but when it comes up, basically we want to talk about things in VR, you know, social worlds, things you can do in VR, in apps and whatever. And Ian this week or recently got to do a tour of a VR chat world. Ian, give us a little bit of a primer on what this was like and what it is.
Yeah, so the backstory here is this is Kevin Mack. He's an artist who has been in Hollywood, or he worked in Hollywood for decades. He worked on The Abyss back in, like, I think that's right at the turn of the 80s to 90s. That movie came out. He did some paintings, I think, for that movie. And then into the 90s, he helped sort of introduce and work on computer graphics as they started getting really big in movies. Yep. And he was the manager, the supervisor of special effects for movies like Fight Club, Big Fish, I think. He worked with Tim Burton on and What Dreams May Come. He won an Oscar for What Dreams May Come. And these movies had a big impact on me personally. What Dreams May Come in particular, I remember seeing that back when it came out and it having kind of an impact on me, even though it's such a weird movie. But it was fascinating to think of all these movies this artist has worked on, and in the context of going into this VR chat world that he made for this, he's been working on a little while. But this is in the Venice International Festival over in Italy, and you can go into VR chat and check out this world. Now, the context I want to give on this person is that I talked to him 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago even now. I went down to his house in LA, met him, saw his artwork around his house, and did this interview with him. And as I'm talking to Kevin Mack, I'm getting like really far out vibes from him, right? Like this person is clearly has a huge imagination, thinks differently. And you look at his art, he's got art that's like just, it's blobs of stuff, right? Abstract creations that he's built. And in the middle of the interview, I'm like, have you ever done hallucinogenics? Because I'm getting that kind of vibe from your work.
He's that like, kind of vibe, yeah.
He's like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He proceeds to tell me the story that when he was like 4 or 5 years old, he had a vision looking at plants in his backyard as a little kid, and became convinced believed that he had beings from the future coming back and giving him messages. And I came away from this interview with this interview like, How am I going to write about this, right? Like, I could not do justice to this like person's imagination, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out a way to
He's
to
like
present
a personality
it.
In himself. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like he reaches out to me saying he's got this new VR chat world where he's built this this thing, and he doesn't know if I remember him, but he wanted to see if I would be interested in checking it out with him. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember you. You talked to me about these visions from the future. And does your new work relate to that? And he's like, yeah, it very much does. And so I go into this world with him, and he gives me a 30-minute tour of every creature in this. And I just got to say, like, I respect different perspectives, right? I like when you see and meet someone who has a different way of viewing the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is someone who views the world differently. And then in his work, right, you've got this this VR chat world where he's built an expansive, large place where you can go, you start, you can check out all these islands, you can go underwater, you can swim, and then you can even go underground into these tunnels underneath this VRChat world. And there's visions offered to you. He literally calls them visions, where you can interact with things. And he's pulled up like music he made in the 80s and has the psychedelic music you can do. And there was a moment in this world where I got twisted around. I had to use PC VR chat to go to this world. And I got twisted up and my cord disconnected. And the moment it disconnected, I realized how calm his world had made me. Right, like it was such a jarring thing to get ripped out of this world, and I was mad because I had gotten ripped out of this just calming thing he does. But there's all this stuff around his worlds, these visions you can have, and these moments, and you're going to see one of them in here, where you just take a deep breath and enjoy being in a specific location and just let your mind go for a minute, right? And so, like, if you're a person who has never done hallucinogenics, that's not something you're not interested in going to, you can still have a pretty wild taste of that going into this world, this VRChat world, and exploring it. But this is so far off from our typical sort of games coverage that we do.
Interesting to have this next to, like, given all the stuff we've been talking about with Horizon Worlds and, you know, where that's at and the avatars and all that kind of Zuck stuff. And then you have this kind of amazing, like, just the scale of this too is huge. That's the other thing. You watching this video, you're like, man, this doesn't end. This is like literally huge. Whenever you start walking in these areas, I'm like, oh, this is much bigger than I think it is. You know, like, it's just it's such a huge scale. And you can tell he's such... I mean, this is, as you said, you can, even without the audio and listening to him, you can tell that he's, as you said, this guy, you know, thinks of life differently, right? Like, there's just a labor of love in every frame of this.
And you feel like he talks about all the beings in there as being benevolent. My battery is going to go dead. So if I disappear, I am not going to a psychedelic place. Okay, I'm just going back to normal reality.
Don't worry,
But this is, I cannot recommend sort of this enough in just being able to go to a place with other people, take a deep breath, and stare at some of his benevolent creatures that he's imagined in this place. This is like stepping into a person's imagination who sees the world very differently and has his creativity in him. So I highly recommend it, and check out the video interview tour he gave me where he summarizes all of this from his perspective. You hear his voice go through everything he's done over his career. And yeah, I if you've got a PC with PC VR chat, I highly recommend checking this out.
Checking it out. Yeah, very cool. So the last thing that we'll go through quickly before your battery runs out, or if it does, I'll finish things up, is another Gamescom demo I did, but is also just relevant because it's available in open beta this weekend, is Mash Me Up, which is this new multiplayer kind of party arcade style game from Holonautic, which are the guys who did Hand Physics Lab, most famously. And this is their next game. I played a few rounds of it. I didn't have much time, but I played a few rounds with them at Gamescom. And the idea is basically you start in a small room with a button that says Mash Me Up. You press it, and you're as your meta avatar, and it matches you with a random other person who's playing into one of these games. And there's lots of different games that you can kind of randomly, you know, play. Some of them, they're completely different too. Like, this one is like Connect Four, but you're chucking basketball hoops. That's kind of more like physics based. Then there's more of this one, which is like Scattergories, where, you know, the letter is C and you have to come up with a fruit and a vegetable and that starts with C and all that kind of stuff. And you write it on the board and then verify each other's answers. So there's some where you're like socially talking and interacting with the person, some where you're more just chucking things and being a bit sillier, like air hockey or whatever. But it's this really cool concept that I can totally see them expanding out if it does well. Like, this is the simplest version of it where you just press the button and you get matched with a random into a random game. I can see them doing seasons of games, or, you know, Fling Ball is this really fun one where you're chucking balls at a big ball in the center to make it push it over a line. I can see them just doing a Fling Ball exclusive mode. I can see them, they've already said you'll be able to add friends soon and match specifically with friends. But the cool thing about this too is that at first I was kind of like, this is not the game I was expecting these guys to follow up Ham Physics Lab with. But talking to them, it makes a lot of sense because it supports hand tracking and controllers, I believe, both. But the real thing they've carried over from Ham Physics Lab is actually the physics system. And they've done a lot of work. A lot of these games have like really fun physics interactions or, you know, objects that use physics simulations. And they basically said for multiplayer, you have to be like five times more efficient with the computing to get it to, you know, work as well as it should. And they say a lot of other multiplayer games use shortcuts that, you know, it doesn't kind of work as well in multiplayer with physics stuff. And the physics stuff was what was really cool in this, you know, chucking balls with another person and it feeling like it just works. Whereas in other games you try where you, you know, you throw an object and it doesn't line up with where the object goes in the other person's screen, or there's discrepancies there and that kind of thing, which they really want this to work like well and feel, you know, accurate and how you would expect it to feel. And it was really fun to play. I think this is, again, the right kind of multiplayer experience for where VR is at, of just quick, non-committal, kind of easy to pick up, put down stuff. And you can try it out this weekend. It's going into open beta. So something to do this weekend, give that a try. I think it's worth it. I'll be keen to try more after doing a little bit of it at Gamescom. But yeah, that's everything. That was a whirlwind. There was so much stuff. There's probably still, there may be a few other games that I missed that I also tried. So apologies to anything that I didn't mention, but I'll have write-ups and everything going up through the next week. I'm just slowly getting through everything, but you know, good to be back. Good to have a live chat. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Any closing thoughts, Ian, before we round things out?
Namawanki is the name of that world from yep. Kevin Mack. Go check out the video that I just put out today on our channel with that. And then, yeah, go check out that. And I'm going to check out Mash Me Ups. That looks cool. I like that idea.
Yeah, it's very cool. Onikaze is asking about Saints and Sinners Chapter 2. Unfortunately, I didn't get to Saints and Sinners Chapter 2. I couldn't. There was a few days where it was a bit weird. It wasn't, you know, we weren't told in advance that it was at Gamescom, and then some people were like, oh, it's actually here. So I hadn't booked in an appointment or anything, and I just didn't. I was rushing between things and never got a chance to pop by. But that being said, I believe that from what I hear from people who did try it, the section that they played, I think, is very similar to, we've got a gameplay video up on the site, which we did like a bit of a preview, hands-off preview thing with Skydance recently. So you can go check out that gameplay video. We've cut down kind of, they gave us 12-ish minutes of footage and we've cut it down to 6 minutes that go through some of the specifically new features like the chainsaw, night mode, that kind of stuff. So there is some footage on the channel of that. Yeah, you can check that out. The chainsaw looks like a lot of fun. I'm keen to try that soon.
Yeah. Thank you for going to Gamescom, Harry. You've done a great summer.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you to all the devs for sort of introducing themselves to Harry,
totally.
Showing him the ropes of who's out there,
great,
what's out there.
Great to meet everyone. Great too. And there's something really nice too about, you know, we do a lot of kind of trying things out at home when we need to on headsets. There was something really nice about just having 3 days of just going and speaking with the devs themselves and having them explain the game to me as they want to present it. There's something really valuable and nice about that. And also, you know, nice to just go, okay, here's 10 minutes, like the 10 minutes we want to show you to make you kind of get this in the best way possible in as short a time possible. It was really nice to kind of, you know, walk around and talk to everyone and meet everyone. So yeah, thanks to all the devs that showed me stuff. There'll be lots more kind of writing stuff, articles on the site going out over the next week. Yes,
we do,
great to meet
and
you
we
too,
do expect
Stephanie
a couple
and
busy.
Onikaze, thank you. Yes, yeah, go on.
We do expect a busy couple months here with reporting, right? We know Quest Pro is slated for October, and it's going to be nonstop as the platforms get prepared for next year.
I think starting from about now, the next year, this September to the next September, is going to be pretty wild. I mean, even without new hardware, we know there's so many games in the works for, you know, different platforms that are about due, I'd say. There's a lot of things that seem like they've been in development for a while, and, you know, I would expect some of them at least to come out soon, we hope. But yes, thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back. I'm not sure when we'll be back for another episode. We're trying to figure out our schedule. But yes, and to answer Onikazi's question, a great day for me. It is daytime. It's about midday. So yes, good evening to Ian and good day to me. That's, you know, that's the time difference. That's why we can do this live now. But thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon. Keep an eye out for more shows. The Download next Tuesday. And we'll probably have another episode of the Gamescast soon. Anyway.
Yeah, and we'll have a Backseat VR Dev next Wednesday. Thank you guys all, and yes. See you in the future. Thank you, Stephanie, everyone else for tuning in. And yeah, check back with us on Tuesday as Heaney and I get into the next bit of hardware news. We'll see you later.
Thanks, guys.